For 1 year, my wife, baby daughter, and I, while residing in the middle of New York City, attempted to live without making any net impact on the environment. Ultimately, this meant we did our best to create no trash, so no takeout food, cause no carbon dioxide emissions, so no driving or flying, pour no toxins in the water, so no laundry detergent, buy no produce from distant lands, so no New Zealand fruit, not to mention no elevators, no subway, no products and packaging, no plastics, no air conditioning, no TV, no buying anything new. But before I get into all that, I should explain what drove me to become No Impact Man. To start, I'm going to tell a story that is more a confession, a pre-changing of my ways stocktaking, a prodigal son, mea culpa sort of thing. The story starts with a deal I made with my wife, Michelle. By way of background, Michelle grew up all daddy's gold Amex and taxi company charge account and huge boats and three country clubs and pledge allegiance to the flag. I, on the other hand, grew up all long hair to my shoulders, designer labels are silly, wish I was old enough to be a draft dodger and take LSD, alternative schooling, short on cash, save the whales, and we don't want to be rich anyway because we hate materialism. Once, during a visit to my mother's house in Westport, Massachusetts, Michelle lay on the bed in my former bedroom and stared up at the ugly foam ceiling tiles. "You know, I grew up with much nicer ceilings than you did," she said. That, her facial expression seemed to say, explained everything. My best friend Tanner, meanwhile, once called me to tell me that his therapist had said that he despairs of Michelle and Colin's differences. Why Tanner's therapist analyzed my marriage was a question best left for Tanner to explore in his next session. But the point was that Michelle and I had a lot to negotiate. And the story I'm telling here has to do with one of our negotiations. For my part, I agreed to put up with the cacophony that comes with Michelle watching back-to-back episodes of Bridezilla, The Bachelor, and all the other trash talk TV. I hate reality shows. Michelle conceded, on her shopping sprees, not to purchase anything made of or even trimmed with fur. That was the compromise. Michelle liked a little fur. Not long fur coats per se, but fur hats and fur linings and stuff like that. Michelle was a daily candy girl, a Marc Jacobs White Stella handbag girl, a kind of Sex and the City's Carrie Bradshaw grows up, gets married, and has a baby girl. On the other hand, call me a pussy, but I felt bad every time I saw one of those raccoons or possums with their guts spilled out on the Palisades Parkway. I also felt bad for little animals getting killed for nothing but their skins. Yet, I managed to exempt, back then, my leather shoes from my concern that humanity puts vanity before kindness to animals. In the cold glare of my own I want to buy, my disdain for designer labels and all things consumers became a little, shall we say, mushy. I was the type of guy who shopped for the 52-inch television, then thought he was a rebel against consumerism because he bought the discounted floor model. I don't mean to imply that I was a total do-nothing liberal. I did go to Pennsylvania to canvass voters in the 2000 and 2004 elections. I made get-out-the-vote phone calls for MoveOn.org when they asked me to. I tried to adopt some sort of an attitude of service in my daily encounters and to generally avoid doing harm. I volunteered at the World Trade Center site after 9/11. I even prayed for George Bush on the premise that hating him just created a hateful world. The question was, given the state of world affairs, whether I shouldn't have been asking more of myself. A few months after our TV fur negotiation, Michelle got offered a brand new $1,000 white fox shawl by a friend whose father is a furrier in Michelle's hometown, Minneapolis. "It's free, and the fox is already dead," went Michelle's reasoning. "It's not one fox, it's 10," went mine. "I've already suffered your freebasing bad television, and we have a deal about this," I said. "But those are your standards," replied Michelle. Then came her trump card. "I want to discuss it at couples therapy." Not that what we actually went to was couples therapy, What really happened was I would drop by sometimes during one of Michelle's sessions with her own therapist. Anyway, I trundled along to the Upper East Side office and Michelle explained the situation. Free fox shawl on the one hand, no fur on the other, which is Colin's standard. Why, Michelle asked, should I have to adhere to his ethic? When the therapist turned to me and said, Colin? I surprised both of them by saying that Michelle could buy all the fur she wants. Except, I said, there's one condition to my releasing her from our deal. And here's the part where I look like a jerk. Namely, that Michelle read out loud certain passages of a PETA brochure about the fur trade that I'd highlighted in green. I can read them when I get home, Michelle said. Nope, I said. The deal is, if you want to renege on our fur deal, you read it out loud, here. Sport that she is, Michelle grabbed the papers, cleared her throat, and began to read. Two results came of all this. First, Michelle decided that she didn't want to buy fur anymore, because she actually has the biggest heart known to humankind, and because we are nowhere near so different on the inside as we seem on the outside. Second, and here's the point of the story. I showed myself to be a smug little idiot. I had mobilized my intellectual and persuasive resources to get someone else to change her behavior and remained, I saw, utterly complacent about my own. It's true that I had occasionally tried to make a difference in the world, but I was coming to think my political views had too often been about changing other people, like Michelle, and too seldom about changing myself. I made the mistake of thinking that condemning other people's misdeeds somehow made me virtuous. I'd become, I realized, a member of that class of liberals who allowed themselves to glide by on way too few political gestures and lifestyle concessions, and then spent the rest of their energy feeling superior to other people who supposedly don't do as much.